What's up, my jiu-jitsu? Thank you for tapping in. Today, we are welcomed by, we're hosting, welcome. What do we say? My man, Kyle Winter, is here with us. He's a brown belt out of John Jack Machado. So he's going to give us a little information on what it's like being a kick-ass brown belt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing that I am, apparently.
Winter's coming.
Winter is coming, yes. Yes, and I have arrived.
And as always, Lizzie. And DJ is here with us. Finally, he's back from the sniffles.
Hey, dude. Next time I'm sick, I'll pull up, dude. And whatever you're sick to, I don't want to hear nothing.
He said you had monkeypox.
I did not say you had monkeypox.
Is that how we're doing this? So.
The rumor mill has started.
Yeah. I heard crazy. That monkeypox is only transmittable sexually.
I think, yeah.
So I go to Japan and all of a sudden I'm attracted to monkeys is what you're saying?
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying, bro. What I'm saying is that monkeypox is transmitted sexually and that's how it gets around. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying anything about you.
I seen something they were saying there's going to be another pandemic for monkeypox, and I was just like, I wish.
Let's go back to social distancing. Like, yeah, everybody, right? I don't need anyone to
say
that. Yeah.
6 feet.
I don't know if I can, dude. The lack of jiu-jitsu killed me. The lack of,
training. That was rough. Yeah, I got to admit, that was rough. Yes.
So you are running fitness and nutrition. Let's tell us a little about that.
Yeah, so I've sort of recently transitioned into personal training and some nutrition coaching.
Okay.
I got tired of working a Hollywood job. Like, I was in Hollywood almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. And basically, I got anxiety, depression, back pain, and carpal tunnel as a result. I don't want any of those things. And, you know, so after doing some research and fixing some of my own problems and then fixing some of the problems of my colleagues, I'm like, well, wait, maybe I'm also good at this. Maybe I could turn this into something. So I did the courses to get my certification, and now we're trying to go in on that. And
let's shout out your IG and any social media.
Yeah, so Coach Kyle Winter, pretty simple. Okay. There's not really anything there yet, so this is kind of like a soft launch.
Go.
So you guys are the first.
We love a soft launch.
Yeah, right?
being the first.
But yeah, I'm hoping to get nutrition content, physical fitness, like rehabilitation content, injury prevention, and then, you know, obviously some jiu-jitsu stuff here and there.
Yeah. What did you have a background that inspired you? Did you go through a weight loss journey? Like, what catapulted you other than...
No, I just have bad genetics.
Okay.
So, I've got shit genetics. So, I actually, my first job in Hollywood, I ended up in the hospital because originally they thought that it was an anxiety attack. I thought it was a heart attack because something was going on in my chest. Turns out it was kind of both. They did a bunch of testing, and this was over the course of like 6 months, and they had me on the treadmill with like the gas mask thing, and they had
like the 50 Cent video,
everything. Yeah, dude, they did everything and they couldn't figure it out. And so they were finally like, well, I guess we could do an ultrasound on your heart. And I'm like, I didn't even know that was a thing that you could do, but okay. And the technician was like, yeah, I don't know, everything looks good. Like, you're probably just anxious. And a doctor walking by the exam room went, wait a minute, go back.
Really?
And so he walked in and they checked it out, and they discovered that I have a mitral valve prolapse, which is essentially, so the valves on your heart, they sort of open evenly, right? Well, mine overlap. So if I don't maintain a certain level of exercise and fitness, then my heart can either start to beat irregularly or just stop beating at all.
Whoa.
Okay. So I was like, okay, shit, I have to start doing something that will keep me physically active for a long period of time.
It's a great motivator.
With not dying tends to be a good motivator. Yeah.
And I mean, genetics definitely like play a part into motivating you into doing what you do. And that's awesome. You know, you want a good future for yourself. So, you know, what better way to channel that? That's great.
Yeah.
So my bad. I just, what did you do in Hollywood, and like, what triggered the initial like finding?
So at the time I was doing graphic, like graphic design and motion graphics.
So you were doing...
Kind of, yeah. So I was actually working for... it was a talent management agency where they took writers and they would sell their ideas as comic books, movie rights, and video game rights. So my job was to come up with I would take one of their properties, and this like Flint Dilley and like Frank Miller, and like those are the type of people we were working with. So I would take like the Dark Knight, Frank Miller, Batman, okay. and be like, how can I turn this into a video game? And I would come up with the pitch document and then design it for them. And then we would try to sell the rights to Frank Miller's Batman as a video game.
Dude, that's crazy.
Every day I'm learning about Hollywood jobs.
There's much crazy stuff in Hollywood. And there's so many egos. I mean, that's what another big reason I got out of it is I'm just tired of dealing with the egos.
I'm not going to lie. That's one that I've heard. Like, I've heard some interesting jobs, but that one just got me excited. I was like, that's fucking cool, dude.
It's cool when you get to work on projects like that, but the amount of money that's trading hands and, like, the level of incompetence, even at the highest level, gets so frustrating.
That goes beyond
Hollywood.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, imagine it's like the same thing, except now, like, because everybody deals with that. We've all got that boss that has no idea what they're doing, but they're in charge of everything. Now imagine that same boss is in charge of millions or billions of dollars worth of content. And if anything happens, it's his ass, which means shit rolls downhill, right? Yeah. Like, you know, it's high stress.
So I have a background in production accounting, and that's the film world that I came
from. So you know all the dollars.
I've done every job in the film industry, and then around 2018, I kind of narrowed focus on production accounting just because that's like a steady career.
Absolutely.
Like, well, so I thought, you know what I mean? This strike, like, changed everything.
The strikes have been bad, and it's unfortunate because I think they're necessary. Like, I think a lot of people have been getting shafted for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not that we don't have the money. It's just going to different people. It's going to people higher up the food chain than, you know, us.
Looking at those expense reports and having to sign off on all that, I can attest to that 100%.
Mm-hmm. What are we talking about? Like, extravagant lunches while the, like, just for no reason?
More than that. Like, trips. Like,
hotels. Trips.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's bad. It wastes a lot of money in Hollywood.
And then the stars always have a say-so in, like, what they can have and get. And some stars are, you know, for lack of a better word, entitled and a little bougie. Yeah. So we need,
They're egomaniacs.
Exactly.
Like,
they need
some,
like,
of them, not all of them.
I feel like what always made me mad is, there's a catering service that we get. And so there's, chefs that cook stuff for you on demand and stuff. But yet, they need their own personal chefs. Mm-hmm.
They will fly somebody in if they aren't local and have them cook for them because, you know.
I mean, I would too if I had the money.
If I had the money, sure, but I would pay top dollar for that. Like,
When you're getting paid,
I'm still going to be cheap. I'm like, hey, cook something and put it in the Tupperware. I got a trip tomorrow.
When you're paid, let's just say, $100,000 per episode, you can't just pay that for yourself. Why does production have to handle it? That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how the evolution of that happened. I'm sure you guys have all heard, and maybe everybody's heard this story, but I think it was the Rolling Stones, and somebody on the internet will correct me here, but they put in their contract, like, I need a bowl of only green M&Ms.
Yeah.
And the reason they did that was to make sure that the lawyers were reading the contract.
Oh.
So if they didn't have a bowl of green M&Ms when they showed up, they knew you didn't read the contract. We don't have to do this.
That's a different way to think about it. It's not just all about, like, oh, no, because I want the green M&Ms. It's to make sure you're paying attention.
But people took that as, I can say anything I want as long as it's in my contract.
Right,
and so it's sort of blown up over time as, like, okay, well, I'm going to get this, and I get free massages, and I have only this guy as my hair and makeup. And, like, so, you know, just gone wildly out of proportion.
Humans love taking a genius idea and just fucking it up.
I don't know what it is.
God, those
you're
humans.
Right about that.
Yeah, humans.
So your heart issue, is that what got you into jiu-jitsu? Like, what started your journey?
Yes. So it was actually, I was a Taekwondo kid. And then I did a little bit of Aikido because, you know, at the time, Stephen Skull was really cool.
Yeah.
Right?
And at the time, we'll watch those.
Once I was diagnosed with mitral valve prolapse, my doctor was like, you know, you have to start exercising regularly. Mm-hmm. And I was never an athletic kid. And so the weight room intimidated me. I didn't want to start just exercising for exercising's sake. And I frankly wasn't really trained on how to do that. I didn't know how to do that. So I'm like, all right, well, I'll find a hobby. And I'd done Taekwondo as a kid. So I was like, all right, well, let's see what's around. And I was watching, I want to say it was Discovery Channel or National Geographic, Fight Quest. You guys ever see Fight Quest?
No.
So it's, I mean, it was from like the early 2000s, but.
I think so. Is that the one where they have like two different types of like warriors and they fight each other?
No, I did watch that one too. I forget what that one was called. But it was basically these two guys, they were mixed martial artists, like before MMA was really huge. They would go all over the world and they would like, so they would go to Thailand and they would learn Muay Thai for like 2 weeks. And then they would do a Muay Thai competition with what they had learned. And they all over, they went to India and learned, I think it was India, and learned Penchak Silat with the swords. And one of them got like really cut up bad. But they went to Rio to a Gracie school and they did Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I was like, oh, this is really cool, because I'd never seen people like tangling each other up that way before. And what really sold me, it's been like a decade since I've seen the episode, but I'm pretty sure they had like a 90-pound purple belt woman who went with this like 200-pound MMA guy, and she destroyed him. And I was like, that is what I want to know how to do. Like, that is so cool that she was at, she just like, it was cat and mouse. It was so easy for her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I need to know how to do this. And so I looked up a gym near me and started the first day. Like, I didn't even do a trial class.
Did you start at John Jocks or?
So I started, we were actually Valley Martial Arts Center, which is now John Jocks Sherman Oaks.
Okay.
We were an affiliate even back then, but we were in like a little dance studio. We'd have to like put down the mats and pick them back up every time. And it was just like four or five of us, and we were all white belts, and so we were all just hurting each other the whole time because we had no idea really what we were doing. We had a purple belt and a brown belt coach, but it's, you know, just a bunch of spazzy white belts in a room trying to figure stuff out.
What can go wrong?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was chaos. And I was the little guy. Like, I'm not, like, I'm, you know, over 6 feet at this point. I'm 180. I was the little guy in the room. Everybody had, they were like, Big Brian, Big John, Big. Everybody had Big in front of their name, except for me. And so I was like, really, like
little Kyle.
I was just little Kyle, and I'm not a little dude. So you know, all right. But I saw the potential there, and I saw what potential like I could become if I learned how to do this.
Well, that's perfect. You wanted to figure out how to like beat up Big Brian and Big, you know.
So it's like, imagine a room full of DJs as like your first class. And you're just, all right, I'm going to get my ass beat for the next 6 months until I figure out how to do this.
Yeah, I don't even want to be in that room, dog.
90-pound purple belt girl is just whooping you.
No, it was great. Like, I loved the biomechanics of it. No, it does. It's crazy. See, some of these girls are just insane now.
Yeah.
This teenage, one right here. Some teenage girls, too, are killers on the mat.
Absolute beasts. Yeah, like, yeah. It's, I love seeing where the women's game is going. It's fantastic.
Especially after CJI last week. Oh, the super fight, actually bringing attention.
That was awesome.
Said it before, and I'll say it again. One of my favorite competitors is Grace Gustafson, I believe, or Grace, she's from 10th Planet. Mm-hmm. But she hits all kinds of twisters, all kinds of, like, just... She's lit, and then she's just a little silent assassin.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
See, you were talking about CJI.
Yes, let's just jump in there real quick.
What did you guys think about CJI?
Loved it.
I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. I think it's a step in the right direction.
Okay. Yeah, and one of my good friends attended CJI. Shout out to you, Josh. And
did you get your shirt?
Not yet. I think that should be coming in the mail, but you know, I'll be patiently waiting. He said it was like 9 hours or some crazy amount of hours that first day of competition, and it was super crowded. The merch table was just flooded with people. But then like the second day with those super fights, he said it was one of the best like productions and events like he has ever been to, and it was very apparent. I mean, it was really fun to watch at home on YouTube stream free for us, you know? So, and yeah, none of that flow grappling production to deal with.
Well, I seen Raf was doing his thing for the CJI, and he posted a picture, and it had like the crowd of CJI and the crowd of ADCC, and there was a huge
big difference.
Huge difference.
Shout out Raf. He did like a whole 9-hour thing. They were up till like, I watched all of them. They were up to like 1 a.m. just broadcasting for us. So yeah, it was pretty solid.
I fell asleep and woke up the next day and seen the update. And I woke up at like 8 and it was like, it updated a win and the post said like 6 hours ago. I was like, how late did that change?
Yeah, he's a trooper. He's like one of the only real like journalists that we have in the community, as far as I'm aware. Like he's been following competition since the very beginning.
It's funny. So whenever he told me that he was coming on the show, like, it didn't like click who he was. And when he walked in the door, I was like, oh shit. And he turned out to be the one of the funniest fucking
dudes. Man, he's so funny. I think he used to write for Conan.
Yeah, he comes from the film world too, from my understanding. We talked, and yeah, he's a comedian.
What? Yeah, no, he's freaking hilarious. I love that guy.
I didn't even know that shit. What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, maybe reach out to him and double check, but I think he wrote for Conan for a while.
That's crazy. Yeah, he had me dying. I was driving home and laughing like, this fucking guy. I never expected it.
That's funny you mentioned Conan, because when you were talking about the fighting shows, how they go to Thailand and learn Muay Thai and then have a competition, that reminds me of the episode in one of the latest season of Conan Must Go, where he was in Thailand learning how to fight, and then just like this whole funny fight sequence of him using like a mannequin arm to beat everybody up. So I highly recommend Conan Must Go. Is great.
I'll have to check that out. I never knew that.
Yeah, it's cool.
I was, what I really liked about CGI over ADCC was the fact that, one, it was free.
Yes.
And like you mentioned, the production value, but I just felt like the matches were better.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't feel like the matches at ADCC really hit home for me. Gordon's going to do his thing and win 9 times out of 10 until his tummy starts hurting him and he, you know, has to poop himself in the middle of a match or something. But outside of that, like, I wasn't excited about any of the matches there.
Well, I think that part of that was intentional, right? Having a big prize, you're going to attract the best talent in the game. Like, people want to win. And I mean, if you look at Cade, was it Cade or Ty and Tackett? That was insane. Like, that is, you show that match to people who want to, like, oh, what's jujitsu? Like, they're going to be like, oh, this is dope, right?
Yeah, I was watching the match and my girl had to, like, get a little, like, jab at me. She's like, it doesn't look like that when you do it. Like, fuck you.
Lower your expectations, hon.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, with different skill levels, different brackets.
You but know. you could tell that they wanted it. Like, $1 million is on the line, so they are going for it. And ADCC, it's like, you know, you get accolades and there's, you know, 10 grand at the end of it. But it wasn't the same. The energy wasn't the same.
10 grand versus a million. Like,
which and then didn't everyone get paid in CJI?
Yes. So you got 10,000 won just for showing up.
That's
okay. Which, you know, and then there was the fight of the night and then the submission of the night prizes.
I did really like, because I didn't know how I was going to feel about like the
alley,
how they had this like slanted like mat, but I really liked it because there's a lot of times in ADCC there's a lot of that running out of bounds to stall. There's
absolutely
things like that. It eliminates all of that and then it adds like an exciting Who used it to kind of get a sweep? I think Nicky Rod used it to get a sweep in like his first match, and it adds like just another aspect to gameplay that I thought was pretty cool.
I mean, both Cade and Ty were bouncing off of him, like doing backflips and crap.
Yeah,
it's. But I think that having that dynamic alley to work with can change the game a lot, and it can make it more interesting for us to watch.
Yeah,
for sure.
I 100% agree, and I think I don't necessarily want to start training in an alley.
Why not?
I mean, I do, because I feel like it could be, from a self-defense standpoint, it could be a little misleading, because you're not going to be able to, like, you know, jump off. You may be able to jump off a wall, like an actual wall, but I don't feel like it'll necessarily translate to self-defense. That's
fair. That's fair.
It's location conditional, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get you.
Now, that's the only reason why, but that and the mats are already crowded as it is. Could you imagine like building out a whole gym just for an alley? Like, how are you going to get everyone on there? How are you going to get your roles in? Do you got to like, are we doing super fights every class now? Like, hey, you with you and like,
They'd have to throw the big dudes in there like certain people at a time, because that's a clusterfuck.
Yeah,
it's a bad time.
Yeah, it's definitely not as practical as just traditional mats, but I mean, I think it's cool. I think it's potentially an evolution of the sport.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't think about the fact that the way they built it keeps them from going out of bounds and stalling. I don't know. That was a genius idea, I guess. Yeah. Well,
it also brought the aspect of the guys who didn't train. You knew they didn't train with the wall because they fought tooth and nail to not get near it. They were like, let's stay here in the middle.
Sometimes the wall is the enemy.
Yeah, and that they didn't know what to do in those situations. And some guys felt a little more comfortable you being able to use it to escape or create room. I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was cool. I liked that.
What did we think about the multiple rounds? Because I ask because for me, when I'm in a tournament and I'm like, I know that I'm down on points and I'm losing on points and I'm like, I'm not tired. I know I can beat you. I just need more time. Like, mm-hmm. if this is just a break, let me get you again next round. Like,
it's giving MMA, and I kind of, I'm here for it, the multi-round. Because, I, you know, just like you, you're going a five-minute round, and maybe you're even on points or down a little bit, and then the end of the match is called, and it's like, I still have energy to go. So, you know, I kind of like the multi-round thing.
And I think it gives... It's kind of what made the matches kind of exciting, because it gave you a chance to be like, okay, I'm down on points, I got to pick it up. And then not only that, it's kind of like she says, it kind of sucks. Like, sometimes if it's your first match and you just get blown out in 5 minutes, but that's not necessarily who you are as a practitioner.
Yeah.
Like,
sometimes we get caught, you know,
you like
slipping.
Yeah. If you get caught slipping in a submission, okay, by all means, get them out. But like, sometimes it takes people time to warm up.
Yeah. Well, I think it takes a little bit of time to feel somebody out, too, especially That's if you've true. Never gone with them. Mm-hmm. It's like, particularly at the higher level, you saw most of those first matches were pretty slow because they're feeling for weaknesses. They're trying to gauge, like, what are you good at? What are you not good at? What can I take advantage of? Second round was usually a little bit of that while they're being conservative. But they started to try and take advantage of the openings that they figured out in the first round.
Yeah.
And then third round is like, all right, well, it's now or never. So those were always the most exciting ones. I think that that's really important as an athlete to give you time to figure out that puzzle.
Yeah.
Plus,
yeah.
like, from a fan standpoint, I think a majority of fans were ready MMA fans. So it's giving that MMA feel to kind of keep their attention. Whereas if it's just one and done round, then, Absolutely. You know, it's... You know, why are we even paying attention?
Well, and I loved the open scoring because it created tension in between matches, right?
Yeah.
If they were 1-1, it's like, all right, this is the rubber match. Who's going to come out ahead? If you're 2-0, it's like, oh, he's got to get a submission. Like, we're waiting for some magic to happen because we all know and they all know who's winning this already.
Yeah. Oh, you know, that makes me think. So I have a reaction video for this that I haven't posted yet, so... Mm-hmm. You'll get some of my thoughts on here. Actually, I'm going to reserve them, but I want to know you guys' thoughts. If you guys happen to see the last match with Rotolo and Levi,
mm-hmm.
Who do you guys think won? Because the open scoring and how it played out, you know, I will say I've always been not a fan of butt scooters. So I'm a little biased.
But we drill
so
it. Wanna, we drill it sometimes.
I want everyone's thoughts, I guess.
Well, I may be the contrarian here then, so go ahead.
No, I don't really have thoughts. I didn't watch that one fully. Okay. Yeah, so... yeah.
So I don't dislike butt scooters, but it has to be an ends to a means. If you're just there getting smashed and not, and like they can't pass your guard, but you still have no sweeps, mm-hmm. you haven't gone for any submissions, I don't necessarily like that. But if you're actively working for a sweep and stuff like that, I think it's kind of good. But it's kind of a toss-up. It's a sticky situation. And I didn't watch the whole match. I got bored and turned it off.
I got hella bored.
So was it like butt scooting the whole time? Like he was trying to...
It was just...
I mean, that was Levi's game plan.
Gotcha.
And to be fair, he was one decision away from winning $1 million with that game plan.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. But... So it's interesting, and Mikey's talked about this before, is particularly at a jiu-jitsu event, I was disappointed that people were booing him for playing guard. Mm. Because of anybody in the world, those people should have appreciated the level of technical skill that he brought to those matches. Mm. And they couldn't, because it's boring. And that's the thing we haven't figured.
I was going to say, on the flip side, there are also MMA fans that don't know what, you know, playing guard means.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's the struggle that this sport has had for basically since its inception, is that it's not exciting. It's not as dynamic as judo. There's not as many face punches as MMA.
Yeah.
And all the little stuff that's happening, you have to kind of practice in order to understand how amazing it is that he was accomplishing those things.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed, although I understand, that people were upset that he was butt scooting the entire time, even though that was a perfectly viable tactic within the rule set, and it got him really far. Like, you can't deny the effectiveness of what he was doing.
I will say his open guard, that I'll say that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the best guard in the world. I don't know.
Didn't they pretty much say Rotolo won from being the initiator?
Yeah, he was the aggressor. You know, that's up to a judge. And ideally, if you're a competitor, you know, never want to leave it up to the judge.
Yeah.
Make it clear.
Yeah.
So that's...
One thing I will say is I am extremely impressed by, like, hard open guards to pass, and I'll always give credit where it's due.
Shout out George Misfits.
George Misfits. I'm spacing right now. I don't know why. Mike, my boy Mike from the Movement Academy. Like, those are people. And then there's one more dude, and I can't remember his name. I used to call him Harry Potter. I'm sorry, bro. But he had the circle glasses. He was just tall, lanky. He looked like the book Harry Potter. But I can count on one hand how many times I passed their guard without being a douchebag.
It's interesting because that is what makes jiu-jitsu unique, is that we can play off of our back.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's sambo, it's judo, it's, you know, these other things. Wrestling, like, can't go on your back in wrestling for most rules. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it special, and that's the thing that everybody seems to shit on.
Yeah.
And yeah. It frustrates me because, you know, I was a guard player for a very long time, and I wasn't actually... Like, I tend to get third a lot when I compete, and it's really frustrating, and I would get frustrated with the point system, but it's like, look, if I'm not going to be in a top position gaining points, that's my fault. And in the ecosystem of those tournaments, you have to play by the rules.
Yeah.
Like, you got to play ball.
I have a question. As a brown belt, what do you think is probably one of the best ways to pass a guard?
Well, it depends.
Okay, we'll just go down, like, you know, are we talking, like, just what about your go-to pass? Like, so it's like knee cutting, are we going over-under pass? How are we looking at this?
I would say, generally speaking, standing guard passes are going to be most effective.
Okay.
If they have a really good open guard, you're probably never going to be able to do that. So then you have to get in, you have to do some kind of a knee cut or a smash pass or something like that. And it really just depends. That's why you need those first 5 minutes of a round to just feel somebody out, figure out what their weaknesses are.
For sure.
Which is, you know, like we said, one of the things I think CGI did really well.
Yeah.
How are you passing guards, DJ?
Yeah, what's you're not agreeing with me here? Or?
Smash and pass.
No, I agree with you. Just whenever you said it depends, I was like, "Nah, we smashing everything."
I'm like cartwheeling over a guard.
It's something I can do, but it's like there's something specific I look for in the person. Mm-hmm. It's like if they're tired, because if I'm gonna cartwheel over somebody, they have to be reacting slow.
Sure,
you know, someone who's fresh, someone who's faster than me, I'm not necessarily gonna do it. Like, I'm assuming you can invert.
Yeah.
Just because you said you played guard for so long, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. No matter how many times I try. So I'd rather pin you down and try and, like, sure, pressure pass. But, like, whenever I catch someone, like slouching over, like, they're really, like, focused on one thing, I'll try it. But efficiency.
I mean, at the end of the day, the most effective guard pass is the one that works for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you 100% of the time make the smash pass work, that's the one that you should be doing.
I'm still a purple belt, dog. Nothing's 100% for me. I think I'm getting to that mid-60, maybe low-70 range.
So if the smash pass is high percentage for you, then that's the one, you know, that you should typically be doing. Whatever works for you, it may not work for me.
Right.
You know, what do you like to do?
I'm a knee cut pressure.
That's great.
You're just because,
like, usually it's a size disadvantage depending on who I'm training with. So I find that, I don't know, the bigger people, I get... And if they're really good at open guard, I can figure out my way up the middle and pass. Yeah. Does it work all the time? Not always, but it works for me.
But it's effective for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Everybody's going to have their sort of special sauce.
Yeah.
So, I see a lot, particularly with new people, is they want to know what is the best version of X? What is the best version of Y?
Sure.
And nobody can answer that for you. You have to be exposed to a bunch of different versions and decide which is good for your body, for your game, for your athleticism, for your whatever. But people don't like that answer because it means they have to put in work.
No, I do like that answer because I've been to a few gyms. I've had a lot of people that have just frustrated me to my fucking core. And I'm not going to lie, they're all built like you. They're all built like you. And it comes with, like, for a long time, De La Hiva used to fuck me up. There was this one guy, X-Guard dude. As soon as I get caught in X Guard, I'm just going to let you sweep me. I'm not going to sit there and
fight. Just going down.
And it's nothing other than I feel stupid trying to like fight back just for you to kick it out. And it just looks like this weird dance. Just sweep me. And like, I appreciate guard playing, but it's just something about kind of what Lizzie said. She can always find her way up the middle. So what closing the space is to me, Lizzie's still like, that's a big asshole that you're leaving. Yeah. And that's what it is, dude. That's exactly what it is. So I appreciate guard play. It's just something that I'm like, I'd rather not deal with. I'll work on mine, but yours, I'm smashing you as quick as possible.
I hate open guard when it comes to the gi. Because I feel I feel like a lot of it is just like leverage and more than anything. Mm-hmm. Whereas like if you're like spider guards, lapels, when they're using that, I feel like it's more of leverage. And if you can like sit down and not let them like move you around, I feel like it negates it. And then it's just kind of like more of a stalling tactic on the open guard player's part.
Sure.
So that's why I hate it in that aspect. But in out the gi, you got a really good open guard. I'm like, hats off to you, because it's so hard to pass. And I think that's what brought this all up. That's what we saw with that last match, was that like Rotolo couldn't pass.
He couldn't get around his legs.
He couldn't. That's so much so he's like, here, take my back, whatever.
Yep. Well, no, I mean, honestly, he was trying to make some action happen.
Yeah.
He was like, okay, he's tried for 12 and a half minutes to get around this guy's legs.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it. Acknowledged the fact that like, dude, you got an amazing guard. Take my back. I would literally rather you have, literally rather have you do that than deal with your legs.
Which is a crazy fucking thing to say.
No, that's insane. But that's how good Levi's guard game was, that he just didn't want to mess with it. He was trying to get some action to happen, and, you know, we all know how it went at this point.
Yeah, so spoiler alerts, Levi lost. I did want to circle back to talk to you about the importance of nutrition and diet when it comes to jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
Me, I eat a lot of fat burger.
Mm-hmm.
And I can actually, delicious. I can actually lose weight on it.
Anybody can.
So I just...
Must be a man thing, because can't relate.
I always go back to calories in, calories out.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I've said this before. I was over 300 pounds, and I went on a weight loss journey, and I've been kind of sitting at 210. And when I'm fat, like 215, 220 since then. And then competition weight, I get down to like 190, 195. But it's always calories in, calories out. So I just count how many calories are in that meal, and then I just won't eat anything else afterwards, mm-hmm. which is not good nutritionally wise.
Yes.
So that's why I want to talk to you about this.
So it, you know, obviously we could talk ad nauseum about nutrition. It's very nuanced, but I don't like to think of foods as being good or bad. I like to think of them as being efficient, right? So you can absolutely lose weight on Dunkin' Donuts and Fatburger if the calories are less than your, you know, daily expenditure. Yeah. Anyone can do that. Problem is, you're going to feel like garbage because you're not getting enough food, and the food you're getting isn't high quality. It's not efficient.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody knows chicken and rice, vegetables, like... It's also like kind of the most boring thing that you can eat. So that's the struggle for a lot of people, is that the tasty foods tend to also be the ones that are bad for you. Mm-hmm. And finding that balance of things that you enjoy using spices or sauces or whatever, and have them be efficient foods that are going to nourish your body, help you recover, help keep your energy levels up. Mm-hmm. That's the trick. And that's, you know, where you get someone like me to try and help you out if you don't have the tools to do that. And a lot of it is portion sizes too. Like in America, we eat a fuck ton of food.
Like those we don't restaurant need to, plates?
It's
yes.
insane. Like yes. when's the last time you like think about like Cheesecake Factory?
Oh my God, yeah.
Right? Like delicious. Love it. Massive plates.
Yep.
This is like four people's worth of food. But I'm gonna eat all of it. Fuck that. Like I'm eating all of this right now.
Like, I'm paying for it.
No yeah, box exactly. to go, yeah.
Like because that's sort of the culture here. And you know, whether that's shifting or not, I'm not sure. I don't think that restaurants want that to shift. But if you go to other places, you can definitely see, like, a lot of Americans feel gypped when they go overseas because they're paying a lot or the same or more money for less food. And it's like, yeah, realistically, that's all you need.
Yeah. Well, I was in Japan a while back, like a month ago, and I realized I was eating smaller portions. Everything was served in smaller portions, but for some reason... I felt more satisfied eating that food mm-hmm. than I did eating food here. And not just in terms of how I felt, but in terms of like, I didn't still feel hungry.
So like, what were you like sushi and what are we eating there?
It was just like a bunch of different stuff. Nothing too consistently, too consistent, but we had like, we were eating like the onigiri balls mm-hmm. that from the 7-Eleven, or getting like Japanese barbecue and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas here we eat that same stuff, but we noticed we ate a lot more of it here than we did
a lot
there.
More of it. We tend to cover it in fat. Mm-hmm. You know, anything that's fried, it's got extra fat in it.
I've noticed too, I was in Bora Bora early June, that there's a lot less preservatives in those those foods there. They grow their food locally, and I mean, I had so much seafood, but it felt so fresh. I mean, being on the coast here, definitely, you know, the seafood quality definitely makes a difference, as opposed to like, you know, when I was previously living in Denver, where it wasn't so fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that that's a big consideration in American diets. It's like a lot of our food is just low quality. and it's just sort of a sad reality of the food industry and like how the FDA runs things. So you have to go out of your way to get good, nutritious food. And it's more expensive than the shitty food.
Oh, absolutely.
Which, so it's like, it's an uphill battle for most people, especially if you're coming from a lower income situation, because to eat well and keep yourself healthy and not have to deal with the hellhole that is the American medical system, you have to spend a lot of money up front to do that by getting good food and having, you know, a gym membership. And it's just, it's difficult. But then you run into health problems down the line and it's like, okay, well now I have to pay for this on the back end.
Yeah. So you mentioned lower class people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say lower class. No, that sounds lower
income.
And
yeah,
you mentioned,
different situation.
Yeah. So you mentioned lower income individuals. How would you suggest that they go about approaching the nutrition, maybe even unfortunately from like, they can only get fast food or they can only get lower quality food?
So generally, fast food is going to be difficult because they put everything in fat. Like in case you don't know, which I think most people do, but just in case, anything that's fried, they literally just put it in a vat of fat, and whatever the food is, it absorbs that fat. Fat has more than twice as many calories as protein or carbs.
Oh, okay.
So if you take a potato, which is French fries, right? Potato is pretty much all carbs. It's awesome. Love potatoes. Everybody should eat potatoes. Baked potatoes, great. You know, fried French fries in the oven, great. You put that in fat, it's now two or three times the calories, even though you're still eating the exact same potato.
Mm, okay.
So that sort of inefficiency in your diet adds up over time.
Sure.
And it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. I can't eat a salad for one meal of the day and then eat garbage the rest of the day and lose weight. It's just not going to happen. So you have to find alternatives in these places that you like to go. For example, if you're going to go to like Fatburger, get it protein style. You know, you don't have to, like, if you want the fries, you can either just nix the fries, which nobody wants to do. You can nix the bun, right? Because the bun is just a vessel to get the food into your mouth. It doesn't actually add flavor or texture or consistency. Or some people, I guess it might.
Yeah.
If you wrap that in lettuce, you're getting your protein. You can still have your delicious fries, put it in your ketchup, and you're coming out better than you would have otherwise. And making those small changes over a long period of time is actually a great way to consistently lose weight.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny you say that. Is like when I'm in competition, I cut out the fries. I'll have the burger with the, I'll cut out the fries.
Right.
Because exactly that, I just know that I'm going to hold my weight different and mm-hmm. I'm going to retain my weight if I'm eating the fries with the burger.
And with fast food, it tends to be really high in salt. And so if you're getting ready for a competition, you ingest a bunch of salt, guess what? Now you're holding onto a lot of water weight. So you can literally, you know, some people, they'll have McDonald's and then they'll weigh themselves the next day and like, holy shit, I gained 5 pounds. It's like, no, you didn't actually gain 5 pounds. You're just retaining a lot more water.
Okay.
So you can either sweat that out or try and limit salt intake up to competition to try and keep that weight down and save yourself the headache.
Okay.
But also, you know, if you were to eat something high in salt, if you're going to eat Chinese or, you know, just anything that's going to be packed in salt and then weigh yourself the next day, don't be too upset about what you see on the scale because it's not really that accurate.
Yes.
It's like you're retaining a lot of extra water. and don't hold that against yourself.
I don't, because it's funny. We go into competition, and my lady will be like, how do you lose weight so fast? Like, because I'm not taking in sodium now. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason why, because if it was for that, I just cut out all the salts. Like, I won't put any seasoning on my burgers, like if I make them at home, mm-hmm. or I won't put any salt on anything. It's just exactly what you're saying. So, the next thing I wanted to talk about was the evolution of BJJ and mixed martial arts. We talked about CGI a little bit and how we got a lot of the mixed martial arts fans into that. Where do we think it's possibly going within the martial arts realm? Because I feel like a lot of people are still not paying attention to jiu-jitsu. Like when let's say UFC first started, I felt like it was like, oh yes, jiu-jitsu. But now it's kind of leveled out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that maybe some fighters need to go back to the jiu-jitsu roots, and more of look at jiu-jitsu as more of a blend of just grappling as opposed to jiu-jitsu by itself. It's open table for anyone to jump in.
So when I learned jiu-jitsu, it was very much in the flavor of MMA and wrestling, because that was the kinds of instructors that we had in the gym at the time. So it was a lot of learning, you know, from standing and learning how to defend, like, those takedowns and stuff. And also, you know, setting up for using grappling techniques to set up for kicks, for punches, and then vice versa. So it was definitely, like, a change going from having a very, MMA approach to jiu-jitsu than having, like, a full, just 100% jiu-jitsu. So it was a bit of a learning curve for me, but now I can, looking back, I'm like, yeah, there's definitely a difference, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's, at this point, grappling's kind of all synonymous with each other. Yeah, that's the only next step that is there. Like, everyone kind of has to swallow their pride and just realize that it's one and the same. Like, jiu-jitsu, the guard is important. It's very important to know how to be able to keep people off you, be able to stand up. Like, that's what jiu-jitsu brings to the table. Wrestling brings the scrambling, the know how to position your body, the know how to pin people, and so on. But as individual sports, I think they can only go so far because it's just missing the last step of hitting each other, like hitting people. Mm-hmm. And like, I know most people, they're like, if I'm going to pay to watch a fight, am I going to pay for the Adesanya fight or am I going to pay for the ADCC fight? Looking back now, they'd probably rather pay for the ADCC fight. But yeah, like that's the next step. We have to just kind of start learning them as a whole, like learning them together.
So I'm going to piggyback off your question here a little bit. What do you guys think about like the combat jiu-jitsu?
It's fun to watch.
I don't know, the open hand strikes.
I don't know why I'd rather be fucking punched than
slapped.
something about that is just, I'm not, don't slap me. I don't know why.
Do you guys think that level of excitement is maybe going to help push things forward, or is that sort of like, why are we not just doing MMA at that point?
I think to a degree it'll help push some excitement, because I mean, what's more fun than watching somebody get slapped?
Just bam.
Why not?
For me it's, why don't we just watch MMA?
Sure.
But then again, like, I don't, there's just a level of disrespect to being slapped that I know that I couldn't go into it. Mm-hmm. Like that, what's the one where they just stand there and slap each other?
The power slap?
Yeah, no. I would never do that.
Like,
have you guys watched Power
it's
Slap?
It's insane, yeah.
I don't think I've actually ever sat there and watched it, but it's come across on my feeds and I'm just like fascinated. I'm like, really? You were just getting paid to slap people?
Just slap the shit out of people. Yeah. No.
I want to know how much they're getting paid, though.
Yeah, for sure.
All the brain damage of MMA fighting, none of the real money to it. That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
CTE from slapping.
I feel like combat jiu-jitsu is, like you're saying, it's more exciting and it adds this other element to it. But I don't want to get slapped in the face. I do want to kind of train it, though, just because I feel like it emulates self-defense. Like, for me, I got into this because I wanted to be an all-around martial artist, not just jiu-jitsu. I ended up falling into jiu-jitsu because of an injury and then just kind of staying there because honestly, I'm better at it than I am like punching and striking. And I got a lot of injuries, so I have to like account for that as my training. And it's easier for me to manage my training in jiu-jitsu and injuries than it is like getting punched in the face. So
absolutely. Muay Thai hurts.
It does. It
Muay
does.
Thai hurts. I
love like getting
Muay Thai.
Punched or kicked. I've done that before. It's not fun.
That's what I kind of grew up with. And I'm like, I love it, but yeah, it really hurts.
Even with pads, it can be painful.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, the shin guard is still taking a kick to it. Yeah.
I kind of like that shit. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, I
kind of like it.
I mean, you like getting hurt?
Well, it's like, I played football for 16 years.
Sure. Yeah.
Something about me since I've quit has missed that, like...
The intensity?
I miss being able to hit people and like, okay, if I'm going to hit back, but I still get to hit you. Mm-hmm. Something about it, it was just...
Have you been training Muay Thai?
No, after the last time I tried to train, my hand was numb for like 2 days, and I just stopped. I stopped training.
That's rough.
Do you do any other training? Because you say you did Taekwondo and Aikido. Are you still doing any other martial arts?
Dabble? I dabble, okay. But I pretty much just do jiu-jitsu at this point. I find it the most stimulating, and I am the least likely to get hurt. And, you know... I don't want to get hurt.
Yes.
Like, I appreciate that people have that level of intensity and that they're, like, willing to take a hit for the team. I don't want that at this point in my life anymore.
So I have a question for you guys. We've all dabbled in at least one or, like, two martial arts. What do you guys think of Krav Maga?
I call it the art of dirty fighting.
Okay.
When I explain it to people, because it's...
Eye gouging and...
Yeah, it's... I mean, hitting, it's effective... I feel like it's difficult to train realistically because you can only do so much full contact before you're actually causing damage to somebody. But I definitely think that it's effective, and I think it's something worth learning. So I'm going to digress a little bit here, but I always tell people, like, find what works for you. Like, whatever is going to keep you motivated is the right thing for you. And if that's the thing that keeps you going to the gym... Mm-hmm. It's fucking great.
I told my girl, she's like, what's the difference? I was like, you just kind of like tap into your primal instincts and learn how to kick people in the nuts the right way.
Eye gouge them.
Eye gouge. You know, I met someone who did Krav Maga, and she told me, she's like, yeah, she's like, the professor told me to bite whatever I can get my teeth into. And like, I was like, so survival instinct.
Yeah.
Not trying to get bit on the mats.
It's effective. You can't argue with that.
It's funny you ask that because I literally just had a conversation with someone the other day about Krav Maga. And they're like, I'm thinking about taking Krav Maga because there's a school. I was like, first off, at your age, be careful. Like, they're over 40, pushing 50. Mm-hmm. I was like, you got to get to a school that's going to let you move at your own pace and not going to throw you in a fire, because your age, you're going to get hurt. And that's a lot of what their tactics are, is like you were saying, survival techniques and like the primal instinct. I feel sometimes it can be a bit gimmicky, a little McDojo-y, just because it's like, how are you going to take on 20 assailants with knives? This is how you do it. No, that's not happening. You get the fuck out of there.
You know what I mean? You run.
So,
that's how you deal with that
situation.
That's
where I have issues with Krav Maga, when they start trying to tell people that practically they can take on, you know, 30 assailants or 5, whatever the case is, if that makes sense, when they start escalating it up.
Yeah, and there's an interesting double-edged sword there for me, because knowing what to do in a lethal situation is sort of different from having the confidence to be in that situation.
That's true. Yeah.
And if you give them just enough that they feel like they could deal with someone with a knife or a gun, they may choose not to run, which is the first thing you should do. Mm-hmm. And you could sort of get your student killed that way.
Yeah.
You know, I've never taken Krav Maga, so I don't want to...
Yeah, neither.
I'm not... No disrespect. But I've seen people... And, you know, I guess... As a blue belt, I thought I was hot shit, right? I had just enough knowledge that I'm like, any motherfucker in this bar, I could take him out. I choked the shit out of him. It's fine.
Okay, it's enough confidence to know that you can take the average person.
Exactly, right? Purple belt rolls around, I'm like, I could take that guy, but I don't really want to. Like, because you start to see how quickly things can go poorly. Mm-hmm. And at brown belt, I'm like, you're too big for me, man. I don't care. Keep moving. Like, it's just not worth it. And I think when you get that little bit of confidence, it can actually be a little dangerous. It can.
Other people will see red. That's all they need to do. Just see red. Totally. Yeah.
And they'll drink a Red Bull and they're just good. Right. Like a just baptized in Monster and go for it.
You're like, no, one time I don't want that smoke, so.
we talked about partying. I used to party, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, but something that rang true, for some reason, dudes always are like, if I'm a buck up to anyone tonight, I'm a buck up to the biggest guy here. And I've been in a lot of positions where I'm the biggest guy here. And around the time of my blue belt, that's whenever I was like, what the fuck? What did you say to me?
Are you me? Huh? Are you me? Because maybe I'll look at the biggest guy. I'm like, if I can just backtake him, I think I can put him out.
In all my like adult fights in life or like things that happen, it was in that time frame. So it just made me laugh how you're like, when I was a blue belt, dude.
No, I thought I was hot shit.
Blue belt confidence here.
And that can get you into trouble. It can get you into trouble, but you don't have enough skill to get out, and that's the problem.
Now I'm just lazy.
Whatever.
Speaking of getting out, we are at that time. Actually,
you're lying.
No, we got about like 7 more minutes. About 7 more minutes.
You're lying.
No,
we did touch on something I did want to ask. Okay. You mentioned you do that. You had some tournaments under your belt. Do you have any stories? Like any. Anything that stands out to you? Any moments that like were special to you? Any submissions you hit that you're like,
you know,
I'm that blue belt.
Honestly, so I've done a couple super fights that were fun. Highly recommend if you ever get in, because like the energy is different. Mm-hmm. Like when you're in a competition, mm-hmm. it's a grind, right? You got to get through 3, 4, 5, 6 rounds of some dude trying to rip your head off. When it's a super fight, you're like, everybody's excited because it's like a break in the action, and you know, it doesn't really matter who wins at that point. But honestly, a lot of my, like I was telling you guys earlier, that like I end up in third a lot. Like I get to the podium, but not where I want to be on the podium.
I know the feeling.
Bronze
and I
King.
Think, yeah, it's like, yeah, like I'm, what am I, the C team at that point? Which is frustrating. And so I've been working lately to try and get my top game up to snuff so that I can like build a lot of points before I try and go for any submissions. Cause I was always very like, I'm here for the tap. That is why I signed up. I want to get the choke. I want to get the arm. I want to get the ankle, the knee, something, right? If you're going to do competitions, that's not necessarily the game to play. It's a defined set of rules. And if you want to win, you got to play by those rules.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of tactics that people use that frustrate me, but it's like I signed up to do this, so get over it. You know, like dragging you to the edge of mat, and then when I get a sweep, they just roll out of bounds and then start us up. It's like, okay, well, that's really lame, but it's not illegal. You're playing by the rules.
Yeah, that's true.
That would push me into like, you know, all right, dude, cross face. Like I'm gonna put my forearm across the bridge of your nose if you make some shit.
Start fighting dirty.
That would make me mad.
I do have a question for you too. What does your mental headspace look like going into the competitions? Because I know for me, I am very anxious, and it's something that I'm, you know, working towards to be in that competition headspace again. But I'm curious about you.
I am generally a basket case going into competition, so I struggle with anxiety, generalized anxiety that I like take medication for.
Okay,
and that gets amplified when I. I'm going to go into competition because now I have expectations.
Yes.
Like people are showing up to see me compete and I don't want to let them down.
Yeah.
And it's not so much that like I'm upset that I lost a match. It's that these people drove here, they paid money, and I let them down because I didn't make it to the podium or I didn't make it to where I wanted to be on the podium.
Okay.
And so that anxiety tends to make me perform poorly. And so it becomes this cycle. So I've, you know, started working on breathing techniques and like I said, working on like my point game so that I have a safety net and that can help me build confidence going into competitions.
For sure.
I'm sorry, keep going.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you about breathing techniques. Mm-hmm. I'm all about breathing. That's like
love it.
That's my secret superpower.
Yes.
is there a certain practice you follow? Is there someone that put you on game for
it? So I've messed around with the Wim Hof breathing, which I do enjoy. And have you had Joey on yet?
I have not. Okay. I need to get up to Arrowhead.
He can definitely lay all that out for you a lot better than I could. But for general anxiety, I do box breathing. Are you guys familiar with that?
No.
Four in, hold for four, out hold for four.
Copy.
Right? So it's just 4 seconds in, hold, out, hold. Repeat.
It's a good grounding technique.
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you know, they use it for meditation purposes. They use it to relieve anxiety because it'll actually affect the nervous system. It will slow down the racing thoughts and give you the tools to sort of think about things rationally instead of dealing with the, you know, catastrophizing or whatever is happening in your brain.
Right.
The chemical flood of anxiety.
It's so easy for people that don't have like generalized anxiety like you and me to just be like, oh, just suck it up and do it. Like there's nothing wrong. I'm like, yes, there's a lot of things wrong up in here.
Yeah, I'm fighting a whole other battle right here that, you know, neurotypical people don't necessarily ever experience.
Absolutely.
And so they can't relate to it and that's not their fault. But it's like you have to understand that people are in different places.
And being told, just breathe it out. I'm like, yes, well, I realize that's effective. Right now, there's a lot going on right now, you know?
It's funny. My lady's like that, and I'm kind of just like, no, she's like, everything gives her anxiety. Oh, everything makes her anxious. And I'm kind of like, let's just go. We're fine. We'll be good. And
people like you frustrate the hell out of her.
Yes. Yes.
That's what I was getting at. It pisses her off so much, but I'm trying to work on it, but... Sometimes I'm like, no, we gotta go.
I mean, I think a certain level of anxiety going into a competition is normal.
Sure.
And in fact, good for you because it means that you care.
Yeah.
Right? It means that you want this and you're going to put your best foot forward. It's when that becomes too much for you to handle that it starts to affect your performance that you need to start considering some kind of intervention.
Oh, I've literally puked beforehand. I'm just like, oh, I've been derailed mentally now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. World League, the amount of people there was the first time I felt nervous. I don't like being in front of people. Like, I've done grappling industries. There's like 12 people in a high school gym. Mm-hmm. Who cares? You know, but whenever I got to like grappling industries was the first time like I felt that like anxiety mm-hmm. and it like... I didn't like it at all. But whenever like we got on the mats and I zeroed in and I was fine. But that's the most that I could say I can relate to that. That shit.
It's funny you said you're worried about people coming to see you and stuff. I was like, damn, I must be selfish because I don't give a fuck about the people that come to see me. I just want to win. That's all I care about. I was like, how do I win? That's my only focus.
I don't invite people though. That's another thing. Like my last tournament, I was trying to like wake up
and on the DL. And
yeah, I wasn't gonna tell my girl. Like I told her beforehand, but I was just trying to wake up and like sneak out. And she was like, "Where are you going? I thought the gym was closed today."
Yeah, I might have a medal later. Yeah. We'll see.
You know, no, but she forced her. She came, but I try and go by myself.
I mean, I think competition's great. I think everybody should do it at least once so that you can feel that energy. And I think that every time that I get ready for a competition, I get exponentially better as a result. Mm-hmm. I would like to do some competitions here coming up, trying to get back into cardio shape for that. Mm-hmm. And see if, you know, the exercises that I've been working on and trying to get my head into a better space has helped. If that will affect my performance or not.
I think it will. You seem like you're pretty sharp.
I'm trying.
We are officially at that wrap
right
now. But one thing we do, and I'm springing it on you, so if you need a moment, I forgot to tell you at the top of the show, is we do a positivity thing.
Get high on positivity?
Yes. We're about to get high on positivity. So I'll start us off, even though I got nothing in my head right now. I didn't write anything down. I will say that I'm positive that, like, you know, I think I've been saying, like, it's been crazy the last few weeks, that few months of just, like, being, like, down in my own hole, I guess. And I feel like, finally, again, it's lifting, and I'm hoping that it'll stay that way. And, yeah, so I'm positive about that. Positive for you coming on. Thank you. I really appreciate it. You're very insightful. The nutrition world, so... I definitely gonna be tapping in with you more on that, because I gotta get this. I gotta get my six pack before I die. That's my goal. I gotta get it before I die. So
we can do that.
I could be 60. I don't care. I just want to be like that shredded 6-year-old dude. Like that. That's gotta
six
be
six pack in the booty.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. You can't forget the booty. I gotta get the booty too, because I got a flat butt. DJ, what you got for me?
What she said just made me think of a specific guy I used to see on the San Diego beach. Just this old dude. He used to rep out pull-ups. He had a fanny pack and some bright orange shorts every fucking day.
That's confidence right there.
Yeah. Hey, he was shredded, though. Like, what are you going to say about it? He'll lift you.
Goals.
Is it my turn for positivity?
Yeah, time for you to get it high, bro.
Oh, man. Okay. I didn't yell at my boss this week, even though I wanted to. No, positive. My lady's family came back from their cruise. That was pretty cool. They got to see, like, go on a cruise and see the, like, the cruise along with the whales.
Oh,
like, out
so,
in Alaska. And then the next positive that I have with that is I only have to work in my job for 3 more weeks, and then I'm off for 3 months. So those are my positives.
Okay.
I've had a particularly trying work week, but this morning forced myself to go to jiu-jitsu, and now I am actually in a much better headspace, and now I'm here with you guys, and also it was also really good to meet you, too.
Likewise.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I quit my Hollywood job recently. I'm trying to pursue coaching full-time, so I'm excited about that, and oh, yeah. You know, having this opportunity is really cool. Like, I love what you guys are doing here.
Thank you.
And I hope to keep seeing more of it.
Yes, sir. You definitely will. We got one more year, you know.
One more year.
Yeah.
One more year. So I guess that wraps up our show. Thank you, My Jiu-Jitsu, for tapping in.
1 second. We did it in the front. Do you want to repeat your Instagram for your soft launch?
Oh, it's just Coach Kyle Winter. It's real simple.
Everybody here has cool-ass fucking last names.
I was going to circle back to it, bro.
My bad, dude.
No, take charge. I appreciate it, bro. Yeah.
I'm just jealous, dude. I'm jealous. You got Matlock, Kyle Winter. Everyone guys says cool ass name.
Where's his Darce Daddy? That's cool too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's dope.
Well, that's not my name, you know. Kyle Winter is your name. Like, I would have stared into that so hard during Game of Thrones.
You know, I knew a girl with the last name Firehammer. That was her real last name, and I still to this day want to change my name to that for some reason.
Dope.
So, yeah.
Firehammer.
I'm not that cool. I wish.
I'm changing my name.
So if you guys are looking for any fitness and coaching and nutrition, tapping with my man Kyle, winter is coming. His IG is going to be up here at some point. Either I'm doing it now or before. Don't, you know, whatever. But tap in with him. One of the ways you can support the show is we got a merch store. So we got the merch store. That link is going to be in the description. And that's all my announcements.
So we're done? I got you now.
It's all you, bro. It's all you.
Like, comment, subscribe. And as always, if you're looking for the smoke, hit up Jay or Casey, you know. But leave Casey alone right now. He got some things going on.
I forgot you do that. I'm retired, everyone.
He's not retired, dude.
He's lying.
Done. He's lying. I seen him in his gi 2 days ago.
No. I still train.
No. He's not retired, dude. He's not retired.
We'll see, I guess.
Typical
we'll
blue
see.
Belt. You can follow me on Instagram @maybe_Lizzie.
All right, y'all. You guys stay blessed. Thank you.